This is the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo. Thanks to Drinkwise. Stay safe, and if you're choosing to drink, be sure to drink wise.
Good to have your company on the Sounding Board, episode 38, series 5 for Drinkwise. Got kids at home, if having a drink, be a positive role model. And Drinkwise in front of your kids. Damien Barrett on the Gold Coast, Craig Hutchison in Melbourne for grand final week, AFL and NRL style.
Hello, Damo, and a couple of things off the top. First of all, on behalf of the Sounding Board fraternity and community and family, happy 50th birthday to you for Saturday just gone. A big occasion, one never to be missed. An incredible milestone for you to walk this conservatively through life and make it to 50 unblemished is a fantastic effort. Happy birthday. Did you celebrate? And secondly, you made it out of the hub, so I know you've taken on board my feedback and criticism last week and you're out. You've now found yourself, looks like a hotel or an Airbnb you've got there on the Gold Coast. So well done. You made it out in time for your 50th. Did you go and get a kebab or something like that on Saturday in the Gold Coast and celebrate properly?
Thanks for acknowledging it on the day itself too, Hutchie. It was really heartfelt. I noticed the text you flicked my way.
Look, I didn't miss it, must be said. No, look, this is what happened. I didn't know the exact day. I should have gone to your social accounts or something, and I'd done a little video for you with the AFL guys, and I didn't want to spoil that by going and wishing you birthday wishes before the actual day. So I thought in my head it was this week. So I'm really sorry. That is very unfriend of me. I apologise to you. A very poor effort. And did you have a nice day?
I did. You do know me well enough to know that when I say this, it's factual. I was trying for it to slide through without anyone noticing that it was while I was away, Hutchie, because I wouldn't have done a thing even if I was back in Melbourne. And it got out. It got a little bit, to use the phrase we use on this show a bit, the famous Dean Jones phrase. It got a bit big on me. It got a bit big. A few people found out. So I had a nice time, though. Thank you, Hutchie.
How did you mark the occasion? Did you have a compliant dinner with some new AFL types and sit around?
No, I was at the what I did do on that day was go to the football, which was a luxury, to watch the prelim final, Geelong versus Brisbane Lions on that night.
There you go.
And that was about the extent of the day itself. But no, a lot of people
gather up the old Courier Mail crew for your time at the Courier Mail when you single-handedly went to war with the Brisbane Lions. You're allowed in the venue in Brisbane these days after you torched them for a year?
Caught up with a few people from that era, Hutchie, when I was walking the corridors early in the night.
Was it good to be home in Brisbane?
Well, look, I'll tell you what it was. It's an impressive ground. I know people may look at it and compare it unfavourably to some of the other grounds around the country, but I'd be staggered if there's a better sound system. And when I say sound system, probably acoustics, but both crowd noise and speakers. So we're going to get a good game on Saturday.
Acoustics and HDTVs and, oh, my goodness, you make me laugh. Hey, I want to ask you in all seriousness to take me through your opinion on the handling of the Rhys Shaw situation. You obviously, like many, were privy and aware of what had happened. I'm sure you had, or was happening, I'm sure you had some meaningful debates with yourself as to the best way as a journalist to handle or cover this. I'm sure our audience would be as interested as we can be, while totally respectful and understanding and supportive of Rhys's circumstances in the decision to keep private the circumstances the way North communicated to the public. Can you tell us your take on how it's unfolded?
I can, and I'd like you to jump in too, because unusually these days for you and I, we actually discussed this particular matter. You rang me about it some weeks ago, wanting to get my opinion and what I thought about it, as I did want yours. And I just want to throw that into this conversation, Archie, because we might have once upon a time done that 10 years or so ago, but we don't talk shop too much anymore. But it was a very difficult one, wasn't it, I think, for a lot of people. And again, even now, as much as on this platform, this program, we traditionally, I think anyway, reveal more or like to reveal more than we would on other media outlets. I'm not going to be able to on this occasion because of the – I use the phrase because it's Rhys Shaw's wanted phrase, or at least people around him, the time and space that he needs to wade through what he's going through. So I just want people to understand that that's going to be the default position on this for a number of reasons, but we'll do our best in a few moments here, a few minutes time from here to hopefully enlighten a little bit. But yeah, to go back, the timelines, I'm not exact anymore because they change, but look, late in the season, there was clearly, in terms of what I was being told, an issue that had to be dealt with at some stage. And that some stage ended up being the completion of the North Melbourne season with Reece Shaw. And that issue does not have an easy end point, that there is no end point to it. And the other aspect of this now too, and this was awkward to talk about immediately when we were reporting the story, but Reece Shaw won't be coach of North Melbourne next year. And while that may seem obvious now, it was something that even I wasn't all that comfortable with, you know, talking about and exploring when the story was initially being made public.
So a lot of people in the public were aware of the rumours. I think the rumours got worse and worse by the day that it wasn't disclosed or communicated by the club to the public. And so as these things happen, they get flicked around on text messages and WhatsApp groups and whatever. And certainly our text machine here at SEN was, you know, daily there was comments and questions building up. And why aren't you asking the question on this and telling the story on that? And there would equally be, I would think, even more people in the public that would say of the media, you've given Reece Shaw this respect. But then there's been many coaches over the years who've gone through all sorts of troubles and you haven't given them the same respect. What makes this situation any different? Has the media started to grow up, do you think? Was it in the public interest? I'm just interested in your take on the different elements of this.
No, they're really good questions, Hutchie. Maybe work with the first one in the order you raised them there. Those emails that do the rounds, we touched on the emails doing the rounds. I mean, the emails doing the rounds and the text doing the round and the screenshots of, you know, the supposed source telling someone something, the bulldog stuff that we just talked about last week. The public always thinks they are in on the story. They rarely are. On this one, they clearly had a fair grasp. Now, I say a fair grasp because I don't think anyone would know 100% of what has happened here apart from Reece Shaw himself. But clearly what was flying around, and to your point, it was widely distributed and there were accuracies within a lot of it. Now, some of it clearly wasn't right. But so I just want to throw that in there. This is one of those relatively rare occasions where what was being distributed widely had a semblance of ultimate truth to it, so or ultimate reality to it. In terms of the second point, you can only ever judge a situation, can't you, the way you act it yourself. And I get the criticism of media. I regularly criticise media myself and ourselves for what we have done in the past and what we may continue to do. But I think there's a maturity aspect to it now where the concern is paramount for the individual. And on this occasion, absolutely, that was at play here. Has it been at play always in the past? Clearly not.
But how, as a journalist, are we expected, or you expected, to be equipped to understand the consequence of a public story, given that we or the media are not health professionals, relying on people to tell us and give us an informed view? How much extra work do you now need to do in the modern times?
Yeah.
And make some sense of this for me.
You and I now have worked on some stories, and this might be easier, this part of this conversation, to remove Reece Shaw, I think, from it. So let's do that for a period of time. Right. We can go back to him specifically.
I have one more question on Reece before we move on. So maybe I'll ask this one first and then we'll get back to that. You said you don't think Reece will coach at North again. Well, you definitively said he won't. If you had known that a week earlier, would you have done the story?
I think I've known that. I've probably known that for 3 or 4 weeks, five weeks.
But you've felt that.
I have felt that.
Yep.
That's a better terminology.
Yep. Yep. Okay, but that wouldn't have influenced your decision on withholding
information. No, that's why. And this, I've wrestled with it, Hutchie, as per that conversation you and I had. I remember when you rang me a couple of weeks ago about it. Because as a journalist, you just once upon a time, if you got a story, the only responsibility you had was basically to get it right. You have to factor in so many more issues these days, and I think rightly so too. By the way, and I'm not complaining or criticising about that being the case, but I've always taken, and this may be a simplistic view, but it at least provides a framework for every story that you approach. And I think you know it by now, the way I look at it. If the incident, if the action, if the event, if the anything, insert the action into that comment, impacts the contract of the person concerned, to me that's always a starting point to at least explore the story. Obviously with the Reece Shaw situation, that did come into play because the event was the time and space that Reece needed. And the time and space is in my eyes, and the way I was having it told to me, too long, Hutchie, for him to be ready to coach North Melbourne Football Club into even the next season. So straight away, there was a reason and a need to maybe pursue this story. But then you do make a few more calls and you're continually getting told what's happening. And it, there's other layers to it which did not make it comfortable. In the end, it was ultimately a club-timed outcome of story. I had got my head around that maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks in advance, that I was going to be comfortable with that being the case. And that being the case happened to be last Friday of last week.
Okay. And then back to my original question, how difficult is this going to be ongoing for journalists to have to make these decisions?
Yeah, because the public will pile on no matter what is said or what isn't said. The public is going to pile on. And this is, I totally want to remove from the Reece Shaw situation. The ramifications for journalism and actions people take on the journalism, Hutchie, is something that is always a worry. I mean, clearly, Reece Shaw and the people around him didn't want this made public for a long time. It was the reason it lasted until last Friday before any form of authority had been given to North Melbourne around Reece Shaw to go public with that particular referencing in a wider email to members. And I think that's also worth talking about too. There was a reference to the finances of the club, to some of the recruits they'd had, and halfway through, and you can look at it as in a cynical, skeptical way, halfway through this long email to members, oh, by the way, Reece Shaw needs some time and space. As a journalist, I look at that and ask and have asked why that was done that way. I get why it was done that way. Partially is because of the complexity to it that we've already discussed here in the last 3 or 4 minutes. Look, I've had a few things to say there, Hutchie. I'm keen to get your views on it now that you've seen it play out the way it played out and also having an awareness of it. Maybe not the intricate awareness of it, but you certainly had an awareness of it a long way up.
So first of all, I have enormous regard for Reece and his family and the whole Shaw family, and my thoughts are with him. I hope that he's doing as best he can in the circumstances, and I really hope that, and I'm sure that he'll play a really meaningful role in football ongoing. So our thoughts are with him. Also think the situation North were in was a really difficult one, obviously, and their head of media and comms is probably the best in the competition, Heath O'Loughlin, and very good at handling these type of things historically, and they've had other people there before that. Brian Walsh was on the board there once upon a time, who was the best at this in the Caper as well. So I'm sure that they were dealing with the best set of circumstances they could, and they had to consider everyone's feelings. And in terms of, when I say feelings, like what the club wanted to do, what his manager wanted to do, what the board wanted to do, it would have been hard to get all of the stakeholders aligned to how was the best way to handle it, because there wouldn't have been a template for a situation like this. I didn't like the Friday late email. I thought it was, I don't subscribe, I know a lot of people have said well handled, I don't subscribe to that theory. I think it was, you had to stand up and deliver that and show leadership in my mind, and I thought either of the Bens could have done that, and neither of them have been nearly visible enough this year. So I don't think that they are immune from criticism here by any means. I don't think that the situation was paid the respect it deserved by putting it underneath, we've had a reasonable financial year and we've found a player in Josh Walker. I mean, it was eye-rolling stuff to get to what they needed to say. Doing it late on a Friday afternoon was clearly designed to minimise impact going into the weekend. And I think what you've seen from the footy industry is fundamentally we love and care for each other. And everyone's first thought, I don't know if anyone whose first thought wasn't, how's Reece? Is he okay? How's he feeling? The empathy and love that he got. You look at the way other coaches spoke about him on the weekend. So why didn't they get ahead of that and by letting it go 2, maybe 3 weeks, the rumour and innuendo they were complicit in, because they didn't communicate it earlier and more strongly than what they eventually did. Now, I know it's difficult. It's hard. There's no right and wrong. And I can't say this because his manager doesn't want that and his family says this. And so I, there's probably things we don't know about, and let's accept that. But on face value, I would have gone earlier, more definitively, expressed love and care and strong support. And in the background, they could have worked through whether he's coach or not coach and taken more time to do it. But I don't think they really have led well here. And I don't think they're immune from criticism on the way that club's been run. I think the last year of the club has been pretty ordinary off the field.
You know my views on that, Archie. You managed to get me to say a lot of things about the North Melbourne Footy Club about 6 months ago, and when you started asking about Ben Brown. And yeah, look, it's been now again, I want to remove totally Reece Shaw from this, but it is a shambles at the moment, and has been since Ben Buckley and Glenn Archer took it upon themselves to take it over totally. And I don't know what under what authority they've acted. I don't know what right they think they've got. And ultimately, I don't know where they're going with it. And I think worse, I don't think they do either, although they may not even know that just yet.
Well, they've made a string of bad decisions, haven't they? I mean...
Where do you start?
I mean, they brought Brady Rawlings in to be the head of footy. Now, you either got two choices. You let him be the head of footy, you let him make the decisions, and you hold him accountable to them, or you say you got it wrong. Brady, you're a list manager. We thought you were a head of footy, you're a list manager. Let's create that opportunity for you instead. But at the moment, they're working around him. They're making decisions over the top of him. They fired his brother.
Or maybe make that assessment before you pick up the phone and say, Brady, come to North Melbourne, because no one in footy who'd worked in footy thought Brady Rawlings was ready for a head football role at that stage of his life at a club that had not the resources that he was coming out of. And that was a decision.
And they need
that was a decision that had to be made then.
And they're clearly young and vulnerable as a group of people, so they need hands-on leadership, and what they've had is hands-off leadership. So, and then, you know, board involvement. So, you know, I'm not probably in the same school with you, as you and Glenn. I think he's a very smart businessman and a great passion to deliver, but I think it's a reflection.
Passion
of
only gets you so far, Hutchie, and passion can be dangerous. And
yeah. So he's not
on the North Melbourne case, that the passion has become dangerous.
Yeah, so he's not immune from criticism either. But I think it's an indictment that he needs to be involved. Like, great footy clubs barely have directors involved in operations and decision-making, don't they?
Again, I don't want to make this a historical lesson about AFL and maybe even NRL, but can you – let's get to AFL. What era has ever been born of a love and an obsession, a complete obsession with the success of the past? I cannot think of one in the last 30 years where it's been born of that. Yes, there's been involvement. Yes, there's been connections to the past. But one that is that what North Melbourne is embarking upon right now, when has that ever led to the ultimate success in the AFL?
Great clubs celebrate their history but don't copy it. Richmond being an example. North Melbourne trip over their nostalgia all day long. And I don't understand.
Essendon trips over theirs.
Yeah, they do too.
As you say, to your point, Richmond was falling over regularly because of it.
Yeah, I mean, North Melbourne Essendon seem to make the best decision they can of someone who's worn the colours before. You know, Essendon's bring back Sheeds, another example. Good clubs just appoint the best people. And I was just saying this yesterday on Footy Classified. I watched all the hoo-ha about free agency yesterday online, and this is the joke, the great teams get their great players and the poor teams don't get the poor players. I saw many experts bag free agency. Players don't choose clubs. Players choose people. Brisbane, 15 years ago, was a club poorly led, so no one chose it. Brisbane in 2020 is now a club wonderfully led, so people choose the people who run that club. People say, they choose the culture. They choose the culture because the people selling it to them convince them of it because they live it. Fagan, Swan, new president. It's the same at Geelong. 20 years ago, Geelong couldn't attract a player, and you know, in that little post-Gary Ayres era, we're in all sorts of trouble. Now it's the place everyone wants to go. Brisbane's never been a destination club. Players choose people. Great people build great organisations. They don't choose clubs. Everyone's got the same amount of money. Jeremy Cameron's going for less to Geelong, much less. Now, people say, they've got an unfair advantage, they've got free agency, and they live in a country town and all these things. They build it that way. Brisbane, most stunning turnaround of a... You could not... They had five players leaving the same year, don't forget.
Yeah.
Pollock, Doherty, you know, all the others that left.
Crisp.
And everyone said, how they ever attract players. We're putting rules in place. Gold Coast Suns is the same. People are starting to choose that place because of its people. So don't worry. Get the people right. Don't you think?
Also too, Hutchie,
if North Melbourne had great... highly aligned, cohesive leadership, players would choose to go there. They're not going there because it's North Melbourne. They're not going there because they're not convinced of the people leading it.
Mm. Yeah, that's very true.
Be of a coach, by the way. They're fit. They'll say, everyone wants the job. But they're going to have to find. They're going to have to sell them to the future coach, right? It's a risky decision.
I wouldn't be touching that job. If I was an aspiring coach, I would not be touching that football club. And that's the one I've grown up barracking for, Hutchie.
It's a risky decision. Now, that's not to say they can't turn it around, but they're going to have to change themselves first, right? Because it's not that they can't be that. It's just that they haven't been yet.
Yeah. why do we in the AFL system weigh so heavily the compensation for the loss of a free agent?
It's one of the
Under what system should a loss of a free agent have that club compensated to supposedly an equal to the player going out, or in some cases even more so than the equal? How does that work?
Well, it's a gift to get something.
Why? It's free agency.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's...
Well, life doesn't work that way. Someone wants to leave someone, an organisation, you don't get anything in return.
I'm agreeing with you, Damo. That's what I'm saying. It's actually a gift to get something. You know, you're most often in life, when someone leaves you, you get nothing in return. In 98% of circumstances, you're in your life and the way you live your life, you're lucky to get something. You should cherish that and be happy with it, because you don't really deserve it. You have been part of the reason the person left. Not all or even most, but you've been a part of it, haven't you?
Correct.
And so whether it's unintended or intended, you're kind of part of the problem. So... You know what? You're lucky to get anything. And the other thing is, don't sweat what you lose, because the system always overcorrects you, particularly when someone's choosing somewhere else. The minute Jeremy says, "I'm going to Geelong," the pressure's on Geelong to get the deal done, and they've got less bargaining power than they had when they weren't nominated. If you said, "I'm going to either Geelong or Collingwood," okay, it's a little more interesting. You got little bargaining power when you know you have to hand over something on the other side of the table, or run the risk of losing the player. So, you know, I think that, like Essendon's situation, they'll fill their boots this off-season. It's a great thing for them, what's happening. They're going to clear out some people who are half-committed. Now, they're all talented people, and they all might have great careers elsewhere, but they're half-committed.
You have greater sway than I do at the highest levels of the AFL. Can you just please get a conversation going about removing compensation for loss of free agent?
You're asking me. I pay your invoice every second Tuesday. You work there. You're the, as Mick Warner calls you, the AFL employee, Damien Barrett. You've got the greatest sway. You walk the corridors.
I might try and do something on that. Actually, I'm getting sick of that.
That were 9/10 of your 50th birthday. I didn't even know it was on. You sorted it out.
What did you make of the Daly M debacle last night? The Daly M being the Brownlow for the NRL, for those who listen to us from an AFL perspective. It's a different count. It's done differently. And ultimately, the winner's known long in advance. And the reason I raise that is, Hutchie, for those yet to catch up with it, there's been a scandal because it was an embargoed release to the Daily Telegraph, and someone inside that organisation hit send on not only the result of the actual event, that being Jack Whiten from the Canberra Raiders being a surprise winner, but then the subsequent opinion pieces that were critical of the award, they all were published before the event, Hutchie. What are we dealing with?
Oh, do you know, wouldn't you love to be in that meeting this morning? Just on the, we've all been in the situation where we've made a blue and everyone wants to pass the buck. You know, hang on a minute, let's go over what happened. Oh, I thought he said that. No, you told me that he said. It'd be buck passing everywhere. It's unfortunate.
You know who will get the blame? The youngest, most disposable person in the organisation.
In media outlets, generally there's an unfortunate fall guy, no doubt. The subs are...
Or girl.
The subs get blamed for absolutely everything in journalism, don't they? Have you ever known a problem that someone didn't blame a sub for? I saw buzzers.
They create a lot of problems too, Hutchie, and that goes back to the old, writers versus subs, doesn't it, that argument?
Well, I'll ask you about the subs. For those who don't know, the subs are the people that hit, edit and publish, write the headline generally.
Crucial to the organisation. Just ask him.
Yeah, the headline... Oh, here we go. The headline is generally the weapon of mass destruction. The headline is the thing that gets you. It's always when you get someone rings you
and headline. The headline sometimes has something to do with the story you've just written.
When you get abused, 8 times out of 10, it's due to the headline rather than the story itself, or at least in your mind it is, because you need, wasn't me, blame the subs. And blame the
We've
subs.
Got really good ones at afl.com.au too, Hutchie. Really, really good ones.
They hand out the blame the subs booklet when you first walk into a newspaper. You're taught, you're indoctrinated by 9:01 in the morning that you can blame everything on the subs. Poor subs. They're nameless, faceless people who get blamed for everything and never commended when the headline's a good one or celebrated. They're the most overlooked people in the whole ecosystem, and I love them.
That's true.
There's been some great subs, by the way. Mark Robinson was a great sub. That's where he began his career, as a sub for 2 or 3 years. A lot of people would forget that. He was my sub at the Herald Sun PM edition.
You couldn't think of any other sub editor than him, could you?
He was a terrific sub. He was. So anyway,
you'd have stayed there.
The subs will get blamed. Just take that to the bank. The sub's already been blamed, even if it wasn't the sub's fault. And then Volandis would have been on the phone last night. What the hell happened? We've had a great year. Oh, mate, this sub, he's had a tough year.
Because Buzz Rothfield, whose byline I'm assuming was on some of the stories, I've seen what he has put on social media, using the quotes, actually, production errors out of my control, accidentally published, apologise sincerely. Total washing of hands from Buzz. Totally get that, by the way.
He blamed the subs.
He wouldn't have hit send. He would have hit send on the story, but not the publication.
He blamed the subs. And in fairness, he's entitled to feel a little let down because it's his reputation that takes it. Look, they've had a wonderful year, the NRL. So have the AFL. It's been really tough. Everyone's working from home. I'm not making excuses for it, but I kind of am. Like, Cara blew up about the medal with Lachie Neale on Sunday night, not going on the neck as well.
Who cares about that?
People are working in really tough environments. Yeah. They are working from home. They're running events on Zoom. They're running rundowns via a teleprompter. They've got six cameras going here, and no one is working in normal situations. We're going to see an egg cracked more often than not. If that's the worst thing that happens, well, I think we've all can live with the season. Well done to the NRL on a great season. Well done to the Daily Telegraph on a great year covering the game. These things are going to happen. Don't blow up about it today. Same with the people who are blowing up about the medal on Lachie Neale. There's going to be a mistake or two made. Next year, hold people a bit more accountable. But this year, everyone's doing their absolute best to get through, and I wouldn't get too carried away.
I tell you what, though, and this is, I'm not directing this at the Daily Telegraph. I'm directing this to all media, my own included. There is, though, compared with what once was the case in media, there is a distinct comparative lack of care and lack of rigour for issues like what we're dealing with on the Daily Telegraph situation of last night. Well, in that the chain of command has clearly broken down on something so sacred to the game and the need to keep that secretive until a certain time.
Well, it's prehistoric, really, not to do it in real time. It's 2020. Tell me anything else in the world that's an entertainment or content event that doesn't happen live. So the NRL might be well wound up about it this morning, but it's very easily fixed. Do the medal in real time, live, and have it unknown until 5 minutes beforehand. And then
you lose control of the product then, the actual product itself. Well, there's an advanced knowledge of the AFL awards, AFL Brownlow. I must say advanced knowledge. I think it's only 20 minutes, isn't it? Because the cameraman knows where that person is who's getting three votes. He's not just fluking having his camera already on that person. So that's just a statement of fact. Beyond the 20 minutes, actually, I don't know if it's any longer than that, but I still feel they do count the votes, you know, pretty much as the count unfolds, unless you know something I don't know.
Well, if that is the case, I've always wondered, that would be about right. 15, 20 minutes would be about long enough, wouldn't it, for the production crew? So I don't think...
As a rule.
They're probably trying to do the right thing by the Daily Telly because the deadlines and people working remotely. So I have a bit more empathy, Damo. It was pretty funny. It shouldn't have been funny, but
Old Nathan Cleary thought he was a shoo-in for the award. He ends up coming third and he's got to sit through the whole count knowing he hasn't won it.
Well, I was just trying to put myself in Andrew Abdo's shoes, who's done a magnificent job as the CEO this year. Imagine how... Your skin would have been crawling through the whole count. You'd be like, I can't believe this has happened.
All right. You give me an idea here on the run. We're going to bring it back for the first time in about 6 or 8 weeks, Jane. We're going to have Spin City.
On the sounding board, Spin City for Drinkwise. Remember, you won't miss a moment if you Drinkwise.
This is where Hutchie puts himself into the shoes of a person who has done something that needs to be questioned. And Hutchie, as a result of what happened with the Daily Telegraph and the Daily M stuff up, I'm going to make you the Daily Telegraph editor. How, Mr. or Mrs. Editor, have you made such a horrendous journalistic and even ethical stuff up on something very sacred to the NRL season?
First of all, we'd like to apologise to the NRL, to the commission headed by Peter Volandis, to all the fans who are waiting to see the game, the result, and to everyone who is watching on television or online, to all those afflicted, to the wagering companies, to the punters, to everyone afflicted, we're sorry. It's our error, and me as the editor take full responsibility. It's on me. We should be better than this. The buck stops with me and it won't happen again. We give that a commitment to our fans. There are a series of events here internally from people working remotely or otherwise that missed the memo. The memo was to keep the story embargoed. Our systems failed. That's on me as the editor. I don't expect anyone to accept my apology, but I offer it wholeheartedly anyway. We serve the game 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We've got a team of journalists who are magnificent, a team of subs who work really hard. 99.99% of the time, they create the best content in the NRL. They're there with you at the game. They're there on location. They're there in Queensland. They're in New South Wales. They break the stories. They deliver the stories. Whether it's the quality of Buzz Rothfield's column on a Sunday, whether it's our fantastic news journalists every week breaking stories. And on the biggest night, we had our only real main era of the year. In a pandemic, it's no excuse. It's buck stops with me. I'm really sorry. We've taken the liberty of sending a bottle of champagne and our heartfelt condolences to those afflicted who run second, third and fourth.
That'll make it all right.
And flowers. And we really wholeheartedly apologise for our error. It was an error of the system of the papers doing, not the person involved. Everyone makes a mistake. Our system should have protected the journalists and the subs better than it did.
Well done.
The other thing they could do is, which would be a nice thing to do, I haven't gotten the nuances of those, the favourite and the winner, a donation to their cause or charity of concern to show their support for them, given the what they put them through last night, or like something to support them. I haven't looked into the actual nuances of what who they are or what happened, but you know, I would be trying to lend my support to their.
Jack White and the Canberra Raiders winner, and Nathan Cleary, pre-post favourite.
They felt like the two people most afflicted by the decision, right? One without being able to get the suspense and to acknowledge it, and the other one lost and had his night ruined. So I'd do something, if I could, for both of them and their respective causes.
Yep. Basil, Perth Lord Mayor. Basil Zemplis.
Well then, he's done it, Damo. Now, where does this not
this story, Hutchie, I think. I think you first mooted that he should run for mayor.
Well, he's basically been the mayor of Perth for the last several years, hasn't he? To see Governor Beasley anoint him was... Kim Beasley, he's run for prime minister, he ran second like once or twice. He's almost had now he's handing over the keys to a TV journal. If you look at himself going, how did this come about? Basil is the right person to lead that city. He's as passionate about Perth, Damo, as you'll find anybody. He's incredibly smart. I think he's a great decision. He'll get things done. He can align people. I think he's long been underestimated, Basil.
Do Lord Mayors do anything, Hutchie, in the Australian political system? I've long wondered this. I've actually expressed this view many times before on this platform. And once again, Hutchie, we're now talking about something we know nothing about. So save the anger, save the angst. I know nothing about the Lord Mayor role, but I've never seen a Lord Mayor actually do anything that means anything.
I think he'll have a big impact on the city of Perth. And I think
How would you know? How would you know what impact he's going to have in the city of Perth? He's 7,000 kilometres away.
He's the highest profile person just about that lives in the city. So his ability, his power comes from his notoriety.
You're just discounting Nick Natanui?
Basil's in that conversation in Perth. He's as notable as anyone in Perth. It's his town in terms of a media town, and he'll get things done, I reckon. I think it's a good move for the city. I think I don't know why he would want to do it. It feels to me like... long rope, short slide, and you know, with a guy who could make short rope, long slide decisions. So, I admire him for his selflessness in doing it. The money's low hundreds or something, which I know it's a lot of that is a lot of money, and people out there who don't have a role that would at the moment. I don't mean that to sound insensitive, but for someone of his profile, he could earn more money than that not doing it. So, yeah, I admire him doing it.
I'll give you 45 seconds on this. You, personally, and your company are launching a station in Sydney. You've got 45 seconds, and that's all.
I've got as much time as I want.
No, you don't. I'll give you 45, you're down into 41.
You don't set the time limits. When you start paying the invoices, you can start deciding how long things go for. This is what's going to happen.
38 seconds.
We start... Thursday, 11:70 SEN, Sydney's home of sport. It's something different and new. We hope everyone gives us a go. We've been a bit cheeky and fun on the way, and as you've seen by the marketing campaign, Andrew Voss for breakfast will be magnificent.
I quite like the ads. I've seen the ads. I quite like them.
We're not taking ourselves too seriously and a lot of people doubting that it can work, whereas we know that it will work. And you look at the quality and talent of the identities, I think it speaks for itself. Vossie for breakfast. Breakfast with Vossie. Newspaper back to front. It won't be just
45
sport.
45 seconds.
Matty White, one of the most experienced and credentialed presenters in the country. Joel and Fletch are going to be a lot of fun in the afternoons. If you haven't got across to Fletch, phenomenon, he's a star. Morning Glory with Matty Johns on a Friday morning. Jimmy Smith, Katie Brown, Steph Brantz, a whole lot more. Jared Whateley for an hour at lunchtime at midday. It's on the SEN app as well. You can hear it in Gosford and Wollongong for breakfast on 801 and 1575 each. Give it a go on Thursday from 6 a.m. It's a little exciting, Damo. We're looking forward to it. And it complements our recent launch of Brisbane 1053.
It would be, Hutchie. Yes. Have you signed the Kevin Rudd petition, Hutchie, against News Limited?
Well, I'm surprised you're not his chief of staff on this. I thought you and your brother would have aligned, and Tony Abbott, all of you. Gee, he's going hard, isn't he?
How does it's quite extraordinary, isn't it, that a former Prime Minister can be so obsessed with an organisation and one person within that organisation to the point that that man is. But he's not going to let this go, is he? He will take this to the grave, Kevin Rudd.
How do things normally end when someone takes on news?
They will already have assigned the pack dogs within their organisation to try and dig up something else that's going to not look good for him. But he won't care, I wouldn't have thought. But that's exactly what they'll be doing right now.
Normally, you don't often see people take them on at the end of their career. You see people take them on along the way and come unstuck. You don't often see someone of, I guess, of a sizable following, albeit in one country, take them on at the end. So, yeah, it's interesting. He looks like he's just a man possessed at the moment. Hey, speaking of news, I want to ask you this. Gladys did the sit-down on with the Sunday paper in Sydney. I assume that was really on the back of having a fairly good relationship with the paper and the reporter in question, and chose that as a platform to tell her story a little bit. What did you think of that decision from a media point of view to be available and a little bit vulnerable in the Sunday paper?
Look, I hate to admit this. I'm not even aware of that, Hutchie, so I didn't see that. So apologies for not having an awareness of what you just thrown to me there. Take me through it.
Well, the Premier sat down with the Sunday Telegraph, with the Daily Telegraph, and told, yeah, it went a little bit more detail than the ICAC and talked about how that she was in love or had made a reference that she had hoped to marry one day. It was a little bit more than she gave the Inquiry, obviously. It was a big front page headline in Sydney on Sunday, and it was obviously an exclusive that was delivered over the Sydney Morning Herald alternative. Clearly, her and News have a supportive relationship. It looks like it's been a cohesive government news relationship. Some, you know, they either go well or they don't in the cities, don't they? This looks like a good one. I thought it was probably, I read some criticism yesterday saying it was risky and dangerous to do the interview because there was some concessions made there which may have been outside the act at the time on disclosure and all these sort of things. Simple man's view. I thought it was smart business. Sit down with the most meaningful paper in town where you've enjoyed a good relationship and tell your story as best you can and as transparently as you can to the people. I thought it was the right move.
You get offside, though, with other media outlets, don't you, when you do open up, as you're saying that she has done, to one particular outlet here. So every other outlet which would have been pitching for that same interview and that same openness missed out. And as we know, Hutchie, it's only human nature, and it's certainly the case in media, scorned media. There's going to be a price to pay for that, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, you do run the risk of putting Channel 9 offside, which owns the radio I mean, it's a News Limited and Nine Town, right? They're the Coles and Woolworths of Sydney from a media perspective, aren't they? And you do, every action has a counteraction. So I'm certain that didn't travel well at the other end. But I think on the balance of probabilities, it was smart business to at least make yourself available. And who knows the circumstances, whether the other newspaper even wanted it or pitched for it or any of those things. Speaking of Nine, did I see your man Nick McKenzie has collaborated with the New York Times on a story, Damo? Just when you thought your love affair with Nick, or for him, the winks of journalism, as you call him.
I think he's winks, and we're now going to introduce another name to him. He's Frankel as well, Hutchie, because that's an international horse that was unbeaten, in 11 starts. So he's Frankel and Winks together now because he's gone international now.
Oh, no. He's collaborated with the New York Times on the resume now, just when you thought you'd seen it all.
I didn't see it. I actually, was aware of it. I saw the promotion too. Did you ever look at it?
I saw the promotion, and it was the most I've laughed all weekend since I saw that picture of you dressed in black walking around the Gold Coast on Sunday with rock star sunglasses on like you were John Bon Jovi. So it was the second.
Oh, so who sent you that? Which person up here sent you that?
Damo, you were dressed totally in black like you were Bono or John Bon Jovi after a concert with massive aviators on a 28-degree day like you just performed a gig last night. On Brownlow Day, Yeah, someone's taking themselves too seriously.
I know who took that photo, and I had just come off the Sunday footy show, Hutchie, having worn stupidly a tux as part of the requirement.
Yes.
I took my stuff back to my room, put a T-shirt on to go and get something to eat before I then went and interviewed. It was Gary Ablett that afternoon, actually, as an all-in. So I had about 2 minutes to go and change, and some person has taken a photo of me.
The Sounding Board Twitter poll is going up on whether you're taking yourself, whether you're too comfortable with yourself. That's going up this afternoon, so you can vote. Does Damo think he's the second incarnation of U2? Is he too comfortable with himself? You're fully dressed in black T-shirt, black jeans, black boots, and oversized aviators, like you've just come off stage on a hot day in a mall. It's an embarrassing look for someone from Melbourne. Anyway,
I'm going to deal with that person after this.
That was the funniest thing I saw. That's done the rounds. And then the second funniest thing was the promo of Nick McKenzie and me thinking of how you'll be sitting there rewinding it. Let's watch this promo again. By the way,
a bit of FOMO this week, Hutchie, not being up on the Gold Coast, and then Brisbane later in the week for the grand final.
Can I just point out another little trend that's emerging too? By the way, is you know what? You know how Winks? You know how Hartnell always wanted to run against Winks, so I could say it ran second.
I think it ran second five times. Yes, to it.
Just watch for this in both print and television. People putting their names around Nick. You know, joint bylines.
Yeah.
It's happening. Joint bylines. When I saw the promo this week on 60 Minutes, it said, reporter Nick McKenzie, producers Joel Tozer, Charlotte Grieve. Now, I'm sure Joel and Charlotte are guns, superstars. They would better be working on it. But I'm noticing a lot of producer and co-bylines around Nick McKenzie. Now, either Nick's driving that, saying these people deserve great credit for their joint work with me, or there's a lot of people going, how do I get on the end of the Nick McKenzie train? Or it's somewhere in between. But you watch the amount of names bobbing up around him. Joint byline, someone contributed one quote to his story in the, you know, I'll get a reaction mitt for you, Nick. Just put me on the end of the byline.
I'll get a reaction and a Walkley.
How many times did you end up on a byline? Like, say, Daryl Timms wrote a story and he said, Damo, go and get me some reaction for the general manager of Fitzroy. And all of a sudden it's by Daryl Timms and Damien Barrett and you're writing the... Daryl was breaking all the stories in that time, and you're trying to get the rub, as the journalist, as WWE stars call it.
Remember the obsession with getting a byline, and it didn't matter how it came, did it? As long as your name was in the paper, they were simpler times, Hutchie.
Yep,
weren't they?
On the day Fitzroy officially died or merged, the front page, and I'll try and dig it up and bring it next week. I'm not sure if I've ever told the story before, but I got the joint byline. I was the second name on the front page. It was
Who was the first?
I reckon it was Michael Horan. It was a 35 to 40 paragraph story. I think I contributed about three paragraphs to it. I had one snippet that ran in the spill. You know the spill? It didn't make the front.
Yeah.
Continued page two, which is called the spill. I reckon I had a reaction from the past players present or something that just didn't affect the story at all. And... on the front page, the day Fitzroy passed, by Michael Horan and me. And poor old Michael had to share that byline on the historic day. I hung it up on my wall.
He didn't like you, by the way. He did not like you. I don't think he liked him.
He hated me. I put it up on the wall.
With good reason, Hutchie.
Good reason, do you think? Yeah, we'll get to that story at some stage. You will get me young on that. So for young journalists out there in newspapers... just look for the byline swoop. If you think there's one little element that can add to a story, and then you've got to have a good relationship with a sub saying, well, I have contributed to this story, fold my copy into that yarn, and then you just bang, you're on the end by so-and-so and Neville Nobody. How the devil nobody's aiming on the front page today?
There's actually
and the editors,
there's a good
the
10
editors
minutes
read...
of this in a future episode of this product, I reckon, Hutchie. Yeah, the Times people have got credit for something that they had no role in.
The other thing is the editors do look at the bylines. So if you're a young journalist want to make your mark, get your name on the end of someone else's work. And I swear it's starting to happen with Nick McKenzie. Watch out for it.
Our man, Frankel, Winks, Nick McKenzie. That was the sounding board for this particular week, being episode 38, series 5 for Drinkwise. Got kids at home. If having a drink, be a positive role model and drinkwise in front of your kids.
Thanks for listening to the Sounding Board Podcast with Hutchie and Damo for Drinkwise. Make sure you find us on Facebook and Twitter at Sounding Board EP. Hit the sign up button on Facebook to receive our weekly email and subscribe to, rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.